going on, y'all? And thanks again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, I'm joined today by the lovely Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios getting ready for the 4th of July.
Word?
I'm not really having any plans. I don't.
Grilling.
Yeah, we'll probably do some.
Come on,
I'm
not going anywhere. You grill all the time, so.
Well, that's why it doesn't seem like a special event. Yeah, I use my grill. Man, I probably grill 3 days a week, easily.
I probably do that or more simply because I don't like to get the house hot in the summer, right? Whenever you're battling the heats and all. So I have, like you, we have entire outdoor kitchens we've built and put together with all the different grills and smokers. So most everything I cook these days is outside.
Oh, yeah. And like the
flat top.
Fresh veggies, grilling them, put them on some skewers, make some kebabs.
Get your kebab on?
Get you some fresh meats.
Your kebab?
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to be I don't think the granddaughter is going to be staying with us, so we probably aren't going to go see no fireworks display or anything.
I'm sorry.
Are you doing that?
No. They're going to go watch it.
Yeah.
I don't care about fireworks.
I don't either. Like I said, I would go if my granddaughter was with us, but if not, I could care less.
Yeah, they're all my family. They do every year. You know, they go to Spark the Park. They see all that stuff. My daughter-in-law, she usually sings the national anthem. Mm. So it's one of those big deals. So that's what they'll be doing, I'm sure. Me, I'm sure I'll be holding it down.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
You were texting me the other night about the hippopotamus movie. Did you watch it?
I have not watched it yet. I did watch the trailer.
Okay.
I did watch the trailer, and I'm just going to have to do it.
Luke is dying to know what you think, because I showed him the text. I go, hey, look, who texted me? And he was reading it. He was like, he's going to watch it?
Yeah. Tell him I'm watching it. I'll text him and tell him I'm going to watch it.
The name of the movie is Hungry.
I'll have to give him my take on it.
And it's like a Lake Placid like movie, except it's a hippopotamus.
I can already tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell him that you were talking mad trash about it over here and that I actually liked it.
Don't do that to me. I got some cool stories
for
you today. Stuff involving UFOs and alien abduction and stuff like that. But before we get to all that, check this out. It says, hello. I heard this is where I can tell some stories in hopes of other people coming clean about their experiences, too.
We like to believe so.
So it all started one day in late January. It was cold, about 30 degrees, with a slight north wind. I hunt on 220 acres of land, mostly thick woods with fingers and ridges all throughout the land.
Where did they say this was at? Have you said yet?
I don't.
Do you need some help? I mean, you need some help hunting on this land?
Oh, yeah. Right. No, I haven't gotten to where it is.
Okay. Yet.
It says, amazing. This place is amazing for deer hunting. Usually always successful and plenty of big ones, too. I have been a deer hunter for my entire life. I'm 48 and have seen too many deer to know what they look like. Anyways, it was late January, so that means shed hunting. We always like to collect intel on where deer bed and travel, always prepping for the next season. I ventured out at around 9 a.m. Mornings are always the best down here. I hopped in the side-by-side and ventured deep into the woods. I pulled up to a steep ridge that we call Red Ridge. I turned the side-by-side off and walked up the ridge. I found some deer tracks, which was promising, so I continued up the hill. It was unusually quiet. We normally hear a bunch of squirrels and birds this time of year, so it was odd. I ignored it and continued scanning the woods. Suddenly, I heard a deer grunt coming from where I parked the side-by-side. It was deep, so I immediately got excited, hoping it was a mature buck. Then, I heard a loud, high-pitched screech. It sounded like a mix between a coyote howl and a bobcat. Freaky. I didn't think I was dealing with a deer anymore. I scanned the bottom of the ridge looking for whatever made those sounds and saw a deer standing up on its hind legs about 100 yards downhill. It was partially hidden behind a maple tree, so I couldn't get a full view. Its legs bent the wrong way. It was abnormally skinny, and it had human-like eyes. Not only that, but its eyes were on the front of its face. I was horrified. I knew everything in those woods, and this was different. I whispered some adult language to myself, and this thing said it back. We were in lockdown, staring contest. Suddenly, it began to smile. Chills ran down my spine. Not from the cold weather, either. Its smile eventually reached to its eyes. And as soon as that happened, it yelled, "Help. I need help. Please." Now, at this point, I had almost pissed myself. If I was deer hunting, I would have my bow or our 12-gauge, and this thing wouldn't exist anymore. Unfortunately, all I had was a pocket knife, and a small one at that. Then I heard a rustling coming from the opposite side of me. I looked and looked back at the thing, and it was gone. No sound, no nothing. I waited half an hour just to be safe, then booked it for my side-by-side. I turned the key, and it didn't start. At that point, I really wanted to get out of there. I ran back to the truck and got the heck out of there. It wasn't since opening day of bow season till I returned. I haven't seen anything weird since. Hopefully, never again. Gibson Stern.
Wow.
Gibson, what you had was a very common deer, a not deer sighting. That's exactly the way it's described all the time, right? Human-like eyes on the front of its face, not on the side. You got
some pocket knife.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, no.
But the grinning part.
Yeah.
It's like.
And then he heard it speak like that. Like we've always heard these things calling out. Yeah. Trying to draw you near it.
See, that's what makes this or the rake or the pale crawlers, whenever you, the thermal stories. It's when they start asking for help or copying the voice of a woman or a baby, it's trying to lure you in. This is something evil.
Well, and the worst part is if you're, what if somebody needs help, but you don't go because you're afraid of it being a mimic?
Dude, if I'm out in the woods and all I got is my pocket knife and I hear somebody yelling for help, I'm going to be like, sorry, bro.
Let me get back to the road and we'll call some people out here. Like, I'm not going over there by myself.
I'll call a Parker County Volunteer Fire Department or something, but I'm not going in there.
I'm not going out there by myself. I'll bring in everybody else. We'll all go together. If I'm dying, I'm taking all my friends with me. We're all going down on this.
Yeah.
Well, I got you one here that took place in the winter of 2006. Said I just moved to San Francisco, California, from the Pacific Northwest to attend college. It's my first time living away from my family, and I shared a one-bedroom apartment with my high school best friend. We lived off campus in an apartment building in Nob Hill. My first semester of college was chaotic and stressful, as expected, but nothing could have prepared me for the mystery of that apartment. It started with the boombox mysteriously turning itself on and off. At first, I thought I had accidentally left it on overnight when the radio would suddenly begin playing. But it kept happening, even when we're not home. Then things became progressively stranger. The kitchen cabinet doors would open and close on their own when no one was in the room. As the weeks passed, the bathroom door and bedroom doors also began opening and closing on their own in the middle of the night. Sometimes they would slam. Eventually, most of these things seemed to happen at night, which made us increasingly afraid of being in the apartment. So one night, after an impossibly long day of school and work, I made dinner, finished some homework, and just went to sleep. I randomly woke up in the middle of the night and found myself lying in the exact same position in the bed. Everything in my room looked exactly as it had before I fell asleep. But I was completely stiff. I couldn't move. I tried to speak, but I had no voice. And my mouth wouldn't even open. Then my attention was pulled toward a dense black cloud looming in the corner of my ceiling. I couldn't look away from it, no matter how much I wanted to. A figure started to emerge from the dark plume. I saw an old woman with long, stringy black hair. She was very pale and frail looking, with sunken features. Her skin was gray and textured like a snake's, and her eyes were black and hollow. I could see only the top half of her body. The rest of her was submerged in the black fog. She was summoning me. She didn't say anything out loud, but I could feel her presence. I felt like she wanted to take me off this plane, and I was terrified. I was shaking, and I honestly thought I might die. It felt like this woman was trying to take my soul. I felt her pulling on my chest. Then I felt myself moving, lifting off my bed about a foot. I still couldn't move, and she continued pulling me higher and higher toward her. I tried to fight back. I tried to scream and yell, but I had no voice. I was still completely paralyzed. Then I realized I had to communicate with her the same way she was communicating with me, telepathically. I asked her to let me go. I pleaded with her. I told her it was not my time to go yet, that I had so much more to live for, and that she had the wrong person. After a few minutes of crying and begging, she released me. I fell hard, about 6 feet, back onto my bed and woke up. My eyes opened and everything was still exactly as it had been, but I still couldn't speak or move. I convinced myself I was still in the dream and that if I'd closed my eyes and opened them again, I would wake up for real. I tried it again, and this time I could move. I found my voice, but I still couldn't tell if what happened was a dream or reality. Everything looked exactly as it had moments before, except now I was able to move around. Completely freaked out, I ran to my roommate's bed, upset and trying to make sense of what had happened. I asked if I could sleep beside her, and she said yes. She consoled me and calmed me down for about an hour. Then she told me to count sheep with her until I finally felt back asleep and stayed asleep again until the morning. After my confrontation with what that unexpected figure was, that these odd occurrences in our apartment stopped. The doors no longer open and closed by themselves. The radio stayed either off, on, or just completely off, depending on where we actually left it. We never had another issue in our apartment again.
Mm-hmm.
So visited by some snakeskin monster lady, it feels...
It feels like the shadow being. It feels like sleep paralysis. It feels like...
Some sort of poltergeist thing in there that manifested itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Something evil, right?
But again, this goes back... Was it a dream? Was it simply a dream? You know, he or she woke themselves up. Right. When they thought they fell back, jerked awake, still had the sleep paralysis. All this went on. Did you dream all of it? It would be easy to say, yeah, it was nothing more than a dream. But the fact that all the stuff stopped after you had this dream, nothing was any different before. Nothing was different except for this woman in the dark mist. And then that's it. And now it's all gone. And then they never had an issue since.
Yeah. And what's odd is the old woman, the old hag syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, why do so many people see the same thing?
And what brought her out?
The hat man. The hat man, the old hag syndrome. It's like people all over see the same thing. Yeah. Why is it always manifest in the same form?
Because they're scary.
Well, yeah.
But old hags are scary. It's just the way it is.
I don't want to find out.
No. Gosh, no. I don't want anything messing with me, my sleep at night, right? Coming in there, messing around. I'm not down with that.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
On the last Elite Show... Do you remember me doing the story about the three hunters in Spain?
Yeah.
Encountered that reptilian while they were hunting?
Yeah.
I got another one.
Oh, here we go.
Very similar.
Another one?
I was just a boy when I had my encounter. My family and I were living in a small town on the west end of Montrose County called Uravan, Colorado. In the early morning hours of June 1969, I was awakened by the barking of our family dog, Teepee, outside of my bedroom window. Now, Teepee never really barked unless someone or something was in the yard that was not supposed to be there. I remember waking up out of a dead sleep and hearing Teepee barking constantly. I wondered why my older brother, whose bunk was above mine, and my parents, who were sleeping in the adjoining bedroom, were not getting up to yell at Teepee to be quiet. Finally, I had enough, and I decided to turn over in my bed and look out the window to see what Teepee was barking at. When I did, I couldn't believe what I saw. There it was, a small circular ship with its landing gear down. A hatch was open, and the stairs had been folded down to the ground. Next to the ship were green, lizard-looking beings. Their eyes were bright yellow. They had what looked like tanks on their back, along with another type of bag. They did not have fingers. Their hands were webbed, and they were holding what looked like bow and arrow type weapons. Their bodies were thin and scaly, even their legs. Their feet had V-shaped toes, and they looked incredibly tall and strong. I remember thinking this looked like some kind of hunting party. My dad was a bow hunter himself, and that gave me the idea. I could tell they were searching for something, but what? I didn't know. Then all of a sudden, another being came out of the ship. He was much bigger than the others, and seemed to be the one giving them the orders. Teepee started barking again, and the being closest to our house seemed upset by it. It drew back its bow and shot Teepee. I'm joking, didn't say that. I could see it looking over at Teepee. Finally, it started walking towards her. I jumped out of bed and ran into my parents' room to wake up my mother. I remember how hard it was to wake her up. She acted like she was on heavy drugs or something. She was like sedated. I could not get her to wake up at first. Finally, I got her up and told her something was going on outside and that it would hurt TP. She still had not fully woken up, but she was very sluggish. My mother followed me back to my bedroom. Once we were there, I showed her what I was seeing outside. I don't know what they did to my mom, but she could not see them at all. She could not see the ship either. All she wanted to do was go back to her bedroom and go back to sleep. Finally, my mother got out of bed and told me to crawl to the other side away from the window, so I did what I was told. The last thing I remember before going back to sleep was looking over at my closet, where the light from the window cast a glow on my clothes. I saw a dark figure trying to look through the window. No other sound came from TP. My mother was not drinking, and she was not taking anything that would have caused her sedation. I firmly believe they did something to make my family sleep, and it just did not work on me for some reason. In the morning, the first thing I did was run outside to check on TP, still in my pajamas and all. Sure enough, she was lying in the front yard, waiting for us kids to come play with her. She acted like nothing had happened the night before. So, crazy reptilian sighting.
Oh, that's crazy.
The mother didn't see it, and everybody was like, and the family was dead asleep, but it didn't work on her. We've heard about this before, these botched UFO alien abduction stories that I think I did a whole show on it one time where they're like botched.
They missed the frequency to tune in to put you to sleep or to control you.
They're not 1,000%, but they're darn close to it.
Yeah. It's like every now and again you get an outlier that just doesn't, like the people that don't fall for the hypnosis when they bring them on stage, right?
You're
They can't. So maybe it's like there's something about it.
And when it happens, whether it's in the fey realm or the alien realm, which some people believe extraterrestrials are also fey folk, it's like they're shocked that it's not working. Like, what? It's not. What?
Yeah.
I've heard of cases of them trying to do stuff like do a procedure on somebody on a bed or a lab table or whatever it's called. And, you know,
then they wake up from the
and they can't get the person that, the person's not under. And they like the quickly the grays scurry off and leave the room like, crap, he's not sedated.
And it's just like if you was to have a gorilla wake up while you were working on it in the like at the zoo, right?
Or the Predator. Remember the movie where it woke up on the table?
Like they don't want human beings loose on the ship.
You know what's crazy? And I didn't recognize it at first till it was playing on the other day. So and what's the name of that Predator movie? Is it just Predator?
It's the Predator, yes.
And they have it captured and they're in a lab and this woman comes in. Remember, she's like a scientist. She doesn't know. And they're like, yeah, we got extraterrestrials. In fact, here's one. And then it wakes up and starts causing havoc. The gun she's carrying is a Umarex air rifle just painted white.
Yeah.
When
I
saw it, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I was like, what's the Leonardo DiCaprio thing on the TV? I was like, I've seen that.
That one. That's it.
It was an Umarex air rifle. Well, I wonder why the armorer chose to use that instead of just a regular, I don't know, M4.
Maybe he was an air rifle fan.
Maybe. Well, then and give it its props and let everybody know what it is.
Yeah. Well, maybe it just needed to look more space-like. I don't know, right? I have no idea. Look, I got one I need to share with you right here. Baker sends in. Baker says, I started hunting with my friend in far eastern Oklahoma about 13 years ago. He had leased at least 1,000 acres there for many years, and that land was part of a much bigger 12,000-acre ranch. Now, in the old days, that area that now made up his lease, along with the rest of the ranch, had a reputation. Back in the early 1900s, felons and wanted men were said to have hidden out there, moving through the thick, hilly oak woods while staying ahead of the law. My friend had held the lease since the mid-70s, and he had had very little trouble with trespassers. Still, when he was at the lease by himself and wasn't in the deer stand, he carried his .357 with him. Now, the first year I hunted with him, I was engaged to his daughter and fresh out of college. I was born and raised in Orange County, California, and still lived there. So those thick, very dark, spooky woods at night, well, they were new to me. The night before the deer rifle season opener, we were sitting in deer camp inside the cook tent, relaxing by the fire. That was when he started telling me a story that made me wish he had waited until after my first morning hunt. He said that about 10 years earlier, he'd been at the deer camp all alone. He was coming out of the woods after the morning hunt when he had suddenly smelled the very distinct odor of frying bacon. He said it was close, as if someone was just cooking just there ahead of him.
Heck yeah. I love it when I come back to deer camp after hunting. Somebody's already got the bacon
got
cooking.
Breakfast going. Biscuits and gravy. Oh, yeah. So he stopped and waited several minutes. The smell stayed there, strong and unmistakable. Now, this man knew every inch of that 1,000-acre lease the way most people know every inch of their own bedroom. He heard no movement in the thick layer of oak leaves on the ground. There was no sound of anyone walking, no camp noise, no anything. The smell bothered him enough that he decided not to confront whoever might be there with only his 3-shot deer rifle. So he went back to camp, retrieved his pistol and shotgun, and then returned to the exact same spot.
He's fixing to catch this trespasser on his property, right?
So when he got back, the bacon smell was gone. He searched that section of the lease thoroughly and found nothing. No person, no fire, no campsite, no cooking area, not even a trace that anyone had been there. He told me the smell could not have drifted in from another part of the ranch or any adjoining land. It was simply too far away, too isolated. Needless to say, that was not the best thing to hear before my first morning alone in those woods. He also told me about several early encounters with trespassers when he first got the lease. Some of those confrontations became tense until he had pulled his pistol from under his parka. He had many other strange stories about certain places on that land, and whenever he talked about them, he got visibly uncomfortable. There were parts of that lease he absolutely would not enter or hunt, no matter how large a buck he had seen nearby. It always seemed to me that he believed some of those areas were haunted by Native American spirits or things or whatever you want to call them. Baker. So it sounds like the ghostly smells of what was there 100 years before.
Right,
like
an old camp.
Maybe it was an old campsite around there, you know, cowboys working the ranch, or maybe it was outlaws or whatever it was on the run, had a smell of bacon left lingering in the air. And folks, speaking of lingering in the air, you need to linger around till after this break. We've got more crazy stories coming. I got Bigfoot stories. Kyle's got some more unsettling stuff, and I got a pale creature coming. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Today's episode is brought to you by the fine folks over at IQ Bar, our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. Hey, listen up. I know it's 4th of July weekend and you got a lot of plans. You're going to be at the lake. You're going to be at the pool. You're going to be in the backyard grilling. You're going to get dehydrated. IQ Mix hydration sticks are the perfect answer. I know that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be in the backyard. I'm going to be smoking a brisket, sipping on some Colorado Kool-Aid, and hanging with the granddaughter waiting for nightfall so we can shoot some fireworks. And I'm going to get thirsty, but I'm going to reach to the IQ Mix hydration sticks. They're perfect for me. I love them. They have amazing flavors. My favorite right now is the Arnold Palmer. I love it. Half tea, half lemonade. It is perfect. But while I'm smoking that brisket, it's going to take hours to cook. So I'm going to get hungry. I'm going to need a little snack. So I'm going to look to the IQ Bar protein bars. They are magnificent with great flavors like salted caramel chip, peanut butter chip, chocolate sea salt, banana nut, and more. It is amazing. If you're not familiar with them, IQ Bar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and the IQ Gel mushroom coffees are low sugar, delicious brain fuel designed to keep you sharp, hydrated, and functional. It is amazing. If you're new to IQ Bar, then I recommend you get the Ultimate Sampler Pack. It's the perfect way to dive into the madness. What you'll get in this Ultimate Sampler Pack, you'll get 9 IQ bars, you'll get 8 IQ Mix hydration sticks, and you'll get 4 IQ Joe coffee sticks. Basically, it's the ultimate survival kit. Now, it doesn't matter whether I'm going to the office, whether I'm sneaking out to go to the studio to record with Cam, or whether I'm out working in the garden, I reach for IQ Bar. I reach for IQ Mixes, and they are the perfect solution to my problems. So if you want better snacks, better hydration, better coffee, and possibly anything else that you could possibly think of, right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack that I talked about earlier. Plus, you'll get free shipping. To get your 20% off, text the word EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, to the number 64000, 64000. That's right, text EXPANDED to 64000. You'll get 20% off all IQ products and free shipping. Happy 4th of July, y'all.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And yes. We're back.
Yes.
Yes. All right. I'm going with it again. All right.
Okay.
Henry sends this, says, in the early 1990s, when I was in high school, I was invited to go on a 3-day canoe and cave exploring trip with some friends. Hmm. Yeah, folks, that's what we used to do. No phones, no maps, no nothing. You just get in the kayaks and go down there, the canoes. Kyle and I, we've canoed the Brazos. You just get in the canoes. Of course, we were like 14. And just down the Brazos.
Rochelles.
That's it.
You'd park your car here. They drive you up river.
Take you up.
And you don't have a map or nothing. You just stay on the river. You'll eventually wind up where your car is.
Takes about 2 days. Day and a half. Yeah, all day and then most of the morning to get there. We'd throw our 22s in with us, your fishing rods and all. And then you just take off. You got a cooler full of food or whatever you need. Depending on if it was in the summer, we would take tents. Sometimes we wouldn't. We just take tarps and just sleep on the ground.
And don't forget, like if you people are listening to this, remember the stories of us skipping rocks at each other's heads. That happened on the river.
That was it.
We were kids then.
Yeah, that was it.
That might have been. That was before we were doing our own trips.
Remember? And you didn't have to worry. We weren't going to get hit in the teeth. We had them under the water.
Ari Lakin was on one of those trips.
Ari Lakin was there.
I got a photograph of him.
Oh my!
Somewhere
goodness.
In his Speedo and his moccasins because he thought he was
in his trucker hat.
He thought he was part Comanche or something.
Yeah. Oh, that guy was something else. So here, this is what we got going on. So they were 2 or 3 years older than I and had more canoeing and cave experience, so I felt honored that they had asked me to come along. There were 6 of us, and we'd planned to float down the 11 Point River in Missouri and explore any caves we found along the way. I'd floated that river quite a bit because I only lived a couple of miles from it as a crow flies, but I'd never been on a multi-day trip. Usually, we only did day floats with relatives or friends who had been visiting for the summer. On the second night, we made camp a little ways back from the river among the trees. It was a fairly open area with scattered trees and knee-high grass. We built a fire, cooked dinner, ate, and were getting ready to go to sleep when we heard something walking toward our camp. So we grabbed our flashlights and shone them towards the sound. Now, at the end of the light, we saw a large, dark shape. It looked rounded, and it was about waist high, and its eyes glowed red. It was only there for a few seconds, and then it ran off. All 6 of us were pretty spooked. We stoked the fire until it was probably visible from space, and then started fashioning spears out of saplings. We never saw or heard whatever it was again that night, and eventually we fell asleep. Later, we learned that there were feral hogs in that area, and I'm pretty sure that's what it was. The only detail that doesn't quite fit is the eye shine. I've done quite a bit of feral hog management at night, and I'm pretty sure their eyes don't shine red.
No.
And as I'm typing this, I am also considering that it might have just been a black bear. I'm not sure what their eyes look like at night. And back then, no one in that area ever talked about seeing bears. Nowadays, there are 1 or 2 reports of bear sightings each year. Looking back, the encounter is almost funny. We were tough, macho boys until we saw that thing. I'm also not sure exactly what we planned to do with those spears.
Yeah. Well, you're better armed, right?
Right. It makes you feel better, if nothing else, to have it. Makes you think that you're doing the right thing at that moment. But yeah, could have easily been a pig.
Yeah.
You're right.
Pigs don't have
glowing red eyes.
Glowing red eyes. Pigs' eyes are like humans.
But I wonder if maybe it was just like, could it have been something? Maybe was it off? I'm just speculating. Off the fire? Could it have been something giving it the appearance? Now, I know they had the light right on it and all that. Must not have been super bright, or you probably could have told it was a pig, been able to discern.
Bears
that.
Do but, have eye shine.
Yeah, but again, I don't know what color they are.
Yeah,
I doubt it's red.
I've never spotlighted anything that had red eyes.
Usually you don't get that. That's usually a dead giveaway that you're like, man, we might have a problem here.
Yeah, but I can remember the days of being young and being with friends and getting creeped out in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
We had a friend,
a close
friend. What do
you mean being young? I can do that whenever do it now.
I agreed, but I remember as a group of boys being scared, and I wasn't initially scared until my friend Dean kept, it was a light on the pole, remember?
Yeah.
That he had somehow convinced us it was something up there, and then I started getting scared. He must have been like 12.
I miss that guy.
It was right there on one of those poles. Remember, it was just like a light. I don't remember what it was. And he saw it, and he said it was something with glowing red eyes up there.
Yeah, and I don't remember what the actual light was even for.
It was on a transformer or something at the Posse.
Yeah, but it was like small. It wasn't like a regular light. It was like a smaller version of a security light.
Yeah.
Unless he was seeing things we weren't seeing, and that was possible.
I remember one time getting freaked out in the dark. I saw something glowing on the ground, and it was only about 3 feet off the ground, something glowing, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I cautiously approached it because I didn't know what it was, anything.
That's how he dies, folks.
No, it was an electric fence, but the power was on, and it had a glowing yellow.
Like a little light to let you know
that it was on. But in the dark, it just looks like there's a glowing yellow thing.
Just a random glow.
Like, what is that? Yeah. No, really. Like, what is that?
Be like just hanging like a little glowing, like a glow stick out in the middle of the woods somewhere. You'd be like, what is that over there?
I went to relieve myself one time.
No.
In the dark. And I happened to go on an electric fence. And that's a jolting moment.
I've heard people talk about that, but I've never.
Yeah. And at first you're like, you don't even know what happened. You're like, what? What's going on? Then you realize.
I remember I've grabbed them like in between the pulses and you think they're dead and then you just go to step through them and they're not dead.
Yeah.
And then somebody thinks it's funny because they've got it cranked up pretty good because they got bulls or something in the pasture. And the next thing you know, you get that
or
funny
the hot
taste
shots.
In your mouth.
I mean, we used to just zap each other with hot shots all the time. People don't know it's like a stun gun, but it's on like a 3 foot pole.
Yeah.
And use it for cows.
Use like a 9 volt lantern battery would go in them. I don't know if they got D batteries now, but yeah, they'll knock the paint off of a chute. You get up next to the loading chute and it'll pop, 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 knock the paint loose off of it.
And we shock each other with them.
Well, we found out, like I think I've told the story, found that out the hard way that you press the button and it still held the charge, so you'd forget and then just stick it over to somebody and it'd just be that little short zap. Ooh. And when it's through a tight pair of Wranglers on the back of your leg, boy, it will wake you up.
Well, let's get on to some more stories. I've got a couple here about strange UFO sightings.
Oh, I like it. Lay it on me.
This first one says, I had a sighting in broad daylight in 1980. Around 9 a.m. in early December. My mother and hundreds of other motorists witnessed it as well. We were driving to visit my father at his work in Beverly Hills and waiting to get on the freeway in Santa Monica. Traffic was barely moving, slow as molasses, so everyone had plenty of time to just look around. That is when we saw what appeared to be a classic silver disc hovering above the area. The object was completely still, maybe about 150 feet above us. It did not drift. It didn't wobble or circle. It just hovered there in broad daylight for what I would estimate was 10 solid minutes. Because traffic was moving so slowly, we had time to get a very good look at it. This was not a quick flash in the sky. It was right there, visible to us and many of the other motorists. People were pointing at it and looking at it. The craft was silver and disc-shaped, like I said. What really stood out was the underside. Stenciled underneath were the words, U.S. Air Force. It looked official to me. My mother and I both saw the marking, and we assumed it had to be one of ours. Now, at the time, that seemed like the only reasonable explanation. Then, after hovering motionless for about 10 minutes, the object suddenly shot off towards the southwest like a bullet. I've never seen anything move that fast in my life. It was shocking. Over the years, I've thought a lot about what we saw and why it might have been there. I don't know how familiar you are with Jimmy Carter and the issue of UFOs. But he is on record as having had a UFO sighting of his own. Carter was no flake. He was a former naval officer with technical training related to nuclear work. He tried to get answers about UFOs during his presidency, but he was apparently stonewalled. When you think about it, it is unacceptable that the nation's most powerful elected leader could be blocked from declassifying something the public has a right to know about. What I've come to believe is that Carter may have had ordered a capture or anything of a back-engineered craft marked with official Air Force insignia to fly over a heavily populated area where thousands of people were sitting in traffic. Maybe the purpose was to make people ask questions that he himself could not get answered. That's a good idea. It's plausible.
Yeah.
Maybe that is reason. But, you know, I remember Bob Lazar saying that one of the UFOs there at S4 had an American flag on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he thought
there was something of ours coming out with all that UAP stuff.
Mm.
It's like, I don't know what's real, what they're making up. You know, I just don't know.
I've got another incident here. This all one right. happened in August 1972 in Minnesota.
All right.
Now, according to a report in the August 1976, great month and year, edition of the APRO Bulletin, which is the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, at around 10 p.m. on the night in question, a family was returning to Canada via Route 59 after vacationing at Thief River Falls when the main witness, referred to as Mr. H in the report, became aware of a very bright light in the sky just ahead of him. He immediately pointed out the aerial anomaly to his wife, who initially, at least, through the thought the light was nothing more than the top of a nearby radio tower. With their four children asleep in the back seat, and the only sound in the vehicle being the radio, Mr. H dismissed the light and refocused fully on the road, he says. However, when he glanced out of the window, around 10 minutes later, he could see that the light was now much closer. Moreover, it appeared to be purposely keeping pace with their car. He turned to his wife and noticed that she was also now watching the light. Her initial thoughts that it was just a light from a nearby radio tower were now dismissed. Then, without warning, the glowing object suddenly rushed towards them. As it did so, it lit up the interior of the car as if it were suddenly daylight. What's more, the light was so bright that it woke all four of the children who were asleep in the back. The youngest child asked their parents what the light was, to which Mr. H replied, "It looked like a flying saucer." Now more intrigued than anything else, Mr. H asked his youngest son to reach for the flashlight that was in the back of the car and to flash it at the object in four short bursts.
Don't do it. Don't.
He did so, and moments later, the glowing object flashed back four times in response.
I thought she was going to say, and then he vanished.
Astonished, Miss H took the flashlight from the youngster and proceeded to flash several long and short bursts of light at this object. Once more, the object responded and replayed the sequence back to the vehicle. Kind of reminds me of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, where they're...
It said, put your son back on.
Playing like tunes back and forth, yeah, or communicating through music. As it did so, it moved even closer to their vehicle. Moments later, the car radio began to crackle and slightly lose its signal, while the engine in their car sputtered, as if it were on the verge of dying. At the same time, all in the car noticed that it suddenly felt a lot warmer than it had only been a few minutes earlier. Eventually, the engine cut out, and the car coasted to a stop on the lonely highway. This is where you start getting scared, right?
Dude, this is the worst part of the whole thing before the real worst part happens.
Cautiously, Mr. H stepped out of the vehicle to get a closer look at this strange craft.
And opened fire.
When he did so, with the curious object now directly overhead, he felt a strange prickly sensation run through his entire body, similar to receiving several small electrical shocks. He watched the object for several moments before walking to the front of the car and asking his wife to try starting the car's engine again. He later stated that the engine would turn over, but sparks would jump up from the plug heads and straight across the coil to the metal side of the other car and back.
Too much power in the air.
Adding that he had never seen anything like this before. As this was happening, Mr. H saw the headlights of another car approaching. He immediately went to the roadside and attempted to wave the motorist to stop and offer assistance. The oncoming vehicle, however, didn't stop. The object, meanwhile, moved away at such a speed that it would be impossible to estimate its speed. He returned to his vehicle, where his wife was trying to restart the engine. This time, it started up as normal, and Mr. H immediately got inside the vehicle and set off back down the road. By this time, the object was just a speck in the sky, and it appeared as though the strange event was over. However, and a few minutes later, it began approaching their vehicle once more. So, hold on.
It's got a, they got a nice ride.
Well, it's the typical thing where they kill your car's engine. They cut the radio off. He gets out of the car. I think they were trying to get him, but then that oncoming car was coming, and they were like, oh, we got to get out of here. We
got to move out of here. Somebody's going to see us.
And then he starts driving down the road. Now he's coming back. Like, they're trying to get you.
It's like a shark. It bites you and then moves off to see if you're going to bleed out before it comes back in and gets you when you put up less of a fight.
Mr. H continued down the road while his wife and their children continued to watch this strange craft. To their amazement, they saw three small discs emerge from the craft, each flying off in different directions. Those were the lookouts, right? Then the larger glowing object moved away, disappearing into the night sky at an incredible speed. One final interesting detail of this sighting is the fact that Mrs. H had been suffering from a severe cold when the incident occurred. However, almost immediately after the object had vanished, her cold was completely gone, and she said she felt really good.
Zapped her with ozone.
Something.
That's wild.
Another wild story. I got another one.
Here we go.
Something very similar to the one I just talked about happened in Flora, Mississippi. It was the evening of February 10th, 1977. Deputy Kenneth Creel and Constable James Luke were on a routine patrol 4 miles outside of town. When Creel glanced up and saw what looked like an ordinary bright star hanging in the blackness, but then it began to grow. It swelled, brightened with a sickening intensity, dropping lower, closer. What had been a distant pinpoint became a massive disc-shaped horror gliding silently toward their moving cruiser. Creel, of course, grabbed his radio and called it in to the Mississippi Highway Patrol, his voice tight while the thing kept on coming. 200 yards away, he finally slammed on the brakes. The two officers sat frozen in the dark. They didn't know what to do. They were straining to hear anything. What they heard instead was a low, mechanical whine, like a blender struggling against something thick and wet. The sound clawed at the night's air. Then it was directly above them, 30 to 20 feet above them, close enough to see small windows glowing with shifting, unnatural colors. Sickly blues bleeding into the reds and venomous greens. It was hard to describe what they were looking at. The officers stared up in paralyzed awe for nearly a full minute before Creel's trembling hand reached for the ignition. The moment the engine turned over, the craft shot up and vanished into the void faster than anything earthly should move. Creel later said, "I know that I'm not crazy. I've always said I didn't believe in this kind of stuff, but I know what I saw. I saw something." He wasn't alone. Highway Patrolman Lewis Younger arrived just in time to watch this thing, whatever it was, rocket upward. Other officers like Deputy Charles Bowering, Highway Patrolman Joel Chandler, and Officer Hubert Roberts had also seen it. Roberts even flashed its headlights at the object, and it answered back. Years later, in the fall of 1995, another lonely road in Wedowee, Alabama? I don't know how you say it.
Sounds close.
Wedowee, Alabama. It says a bus carrying 10 to 12 women from a church group in LaGrange, Georgia, was heading to Anniston for a bingo night.
I was just going to say it was a bingo bus.
Right. They knew the route well. They always dreaded passing the poultry plant because of the thick, choking stench that hung there every time they went by it. But that night, the smell was the least of their worries. A strange light hovered over the plant. At first, they thought it was just another building light, but then they noticed that it moved. One woman cried out, "It's not a light! It's some kind of flying thing!" The driver, who was a local businessman and fellow church member, floored it. The object followed. It kept pace, staying about 50 feet back, shaped like a grotesque glowing light bulb. Two of the women swore they saw a humanoid silhouette moving around inside it. Worse still, a narrow beam of sparking light lanced out from the craft. It hurt just to look at it. That's how bright it was. Several passengers suffered burning, irritated eyes for days afterwards. Most of them huddled away from the windows, too afraid even to peek. The driver tried to lose it under the underpass. For a moment, they thought they had escaped. Then they came out to the other side. There it was, waiting directly overhead, patient as a spider. It stalked them, they said, for several more agonizing minutes until the bus stopped at an intersection. Only then did the thing drift out over a nearby field before it streaked upward with terrifying speed, leaving a glowing wound across the sky that lingered for seconds. They don't know what it was.
What?
But it was the UFO was jacking with them. The
just
bus.
Trailing them. Maybe all they wanted was some good recipes. You know there were good recipes on that bus.
Yeah, maybe so.
Just like, I'm just looking for the killer cheesecake recipe. And I know one of you ladies have it.
I want to know your baked beans.
Yeah,
recipe.
I need to know that. You know where y'all make that Jell-O with stuff floating in it, like little wieners and pieces of fruit? That's what I need to put in my craft.
I got another.
Oh, here we go. Is this going to be more where they're tracking people down?
This is another sighting. This happened in Alabama as well.
Let me ask you this. How terrifying would it be to where you couldn't get away? It's like maybe they're just messing with you.
Oh, yeah. It'd be
terrifying. It's one thing, like I get abductions and them coming at us. But like when you're on that and it's a whole bunch of people and you're trying to outrun it, like it's not just one person telling you.
Yeah, it's 12 people on that.
Yeah, trying to outrun and elude a UFO.
If I want to get abducted, I want it to happen while I'm asleep and I want to wipe my memory so I don't know it happened. What I don't want is in the chase after me.
So, but for all you know, you've been being abducted.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think they've been sampling your hair. They need to replant.
All right, folks.
They're strip mining his head.
Moving
folks.
Forward, this was also happened in Alabama. Took place in the Alabama's Trickum Valley in 2003. Two police officers on night patrol suddenly found their cruiser bathed in an intense, unnatural glow. The light was coming from directly above them. Whatever it was, it matched their speed perfectly. See, I don't like this light thing shining down from above.
I don't like this.
Because it reminds me of something that happened nearby here.
Yeah. I don't like this.
The driver accelerated, heart hammering. The object accelerated with him. When they finally skidded to a stop and stepped out to confront it, the thing simply vanished. They climbed back in. But now, the car was dead. No headlights, no electrical systems, just a grinding sound of an engine that refused to bring the lights back to life. They crept forward in total darkness until they reached a group of campers. Every one of them had seen the bright light moving across the sky. The officers never got answers. They don't know what that was jacking with their patrol car, but it did. That's creepy as well as them chasing the women in the bus.
Yeah.
But nothing compares to what happened in Maine on the early morning of October 27th, 1975.
I'm going to tell you, that's a great year.
It was around 3 a.m. 22-year-old David Stevens and his friend, Glenn Gray, were driving a quiet road near Oxford when a glowing object the size of a football field appeared ahead of them, bearing down like a predator. It hovered directly overhead. A blinding beam struck the car, forcing it into a violent skid. Then nothing. When they came to, hours had vanished.
You're telling me the aliens pit maneuvered the car in 1975?
With just a light.
With just light.
Yeah.
Look out.
It knocked them out. When they came to, hours had vanished. What followed, unlocked later through hypnotic regression, is the stuff of nightmares. They remembered the car being lifted. Strange colored lights swirling outside. Then David found himself looking down at their vehicle from a window in some otherworldly room. Inside with him stood a creature about 4.5 feet tall. It had a massive, mushroom-shaped head, enormous black eyes, and only two small holes where a nose should have been. It wore a flowing robe, like some obscene priest, is the way he described it. A voice...
Hugh Hefner in the alien ship.
Yeah. A voice slithered into David's mind. It said, "Do not be afraid."
It said, "You like my robe?"
It led him to another room where more of the creatures waited around an operating table. The voice commanded him to lie down.
Whoa. You can tell me not to be afraid all you want to, but you're going to lead me into an operating table circled by a bunch of aliens? That's not going to work.
Blood samples were taken. When they told him to undress, he snapped, lashing out and striking one of them. The creatures recoiled, but quickly closed in again. The voice returned, calm and cold, and it said, "No harm will come to you." Overwhelmed and not knowing what to do, David obeyed.
No, you just start swinging then, because you're like, oh, they're not going to fight back. Teep kick!
A large machine-like an X-ray slid over him, clicking ominously. They took hair and fingernail samples, sealing them into bizarre tubes. When it was over, he was allowed to dress, only to find himself back at the window staring down at his car again. Then, time seemed to fast forward. He was suddenly in the driver's seat with Glenn right beside him. The massive craft still hovered above. Almost against his will, David started the car and drove. They reached the town of Poland before it finally left them. But it wasn't over. Soon, the car was taken again. This time, they were pulled into a dark lane overlooking Trip Pond. The engine died. A huge object appeared ahead at 300 feet. Two smaller craft rose from the black water of the lake, darting and diving like living things, before all three shot up into the sky and vanished. They made it home just before dawn. Both men collapsed into bed, swearing never to speak of it. But their bodies betrayed them. They woke, burning with a fever, yet shivering with cold. Their hands and feet swelled. They couldn't walk straight. They couldn't see straight. They couldn't speak properly. For days, they suffered in a dazed, sweating hell. When Deputy Sheriff Eldon Bartlett came by, the fear pouring off both young men was unmistakable. They told him everything. UFO investigator Brent Raines visited the next day and saw the same terror in their eyes. Later, under hypnosis with Dr. Herbert Hopkins, more fragments emerged, enough to convince the skeptical doctor that something real and extraterrestrial had in fact happened. David Stevens paid a heavy price, ridiculed by his community. He lost his job, yet he kept talking, desperate to understand why they had chosen him and why he still felt, for years afterwards, that they were still out there watching him and following him. That's the most terrifying part.
Dude.
Is these are both...
These are
officers.
No thanks.
And they both were abducted.
Yeah.
And they, like they said, the community ridiculed them. They lost their job. They lost everything. Lost his marriage. Everything. Because people thought he was crazy.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, how do you explain? Both of you got the exact same thing.
Yeah. Right?
Both of you've got the swelling. Both of you've got all the stuff that's happening. And like, it's kind of hard to deny. What else causes it? You think a bunch of dudes are going to, like, you're two officers. What are y'all doing?
Well, and I'll bring one thing up. With all these, like, possible abductions that I talked about and the actual abductions, but the time period, this was all during the 70s. It was like a hot time. Whitley Strieber, doesn't matter, all through like the 70s and the 80s, there was a lot of UFO abduction stories. You don't seem to hear about them as much anymore.
But they've gotten better at them.
Yeah, maybe, or at least not as mainstream. In fact, I'm one of the few people who does what we do that thinks that the original, or at least the most in the modern era, the original UFO sighting or flying saucer was coined by Kenneth Arnold. And I don't think he saw a UFO. I really don't. Let me explain. On June 24th, 1947, so that's 79 years ago, Kenneth Arnold was flying towards Mount Rainier, and he was looking for a downed, missing Marine Corps C-46 transport that had recently crashed. There was a convoy of them. Something happened. It crashed, and it was in a very remote area, and people didn't know where the plane wreckage was, and they were offering a reward for anybody that could find the plane wreckage.
And it was a beautiful day while he was out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was a beautiful day. So he was up there flying around. He had his pilot's license with over 4,000 hours of flying. He was an experienced pilot.
You could say he knew what he was doing behind the stick.
Yeah. At around 3 p.m., he saw what he described as 9 bright metallic objects moving from north to south. He said they were maintaining equal spacing, and they were occasionally banking and flashing in the sunlight. Now, the flashing, he said, is from the sunlight. He didn't say that there were lights on these things. He also repeatedly emphasized that these things were not spinning. People think he reported seeing flying saucers. He didn't. His later drawing to Army Air Force intelligence officers shows objects that look much more like boomerangs or crescent-shaped wings than circular disks. This is perhaps the most famous media misunderstanding in UFO history. Arnold said that the object moved like a saucer would if you skipped it across the water. He was describing their motion, not their shapes.
Yeah,
but the newspapers misunderstood him and reported that he had seen flying saucers. And for whatever reason, the word stuck.
So you think it could have been ours?
I think it became ours. What I mean is, okay, so you know.
Everybody get your tinfoil out and make your hat. Here we go.
You know me. And sadly, you know that when I was younger, I was a hardcore enthusiast of aircraft.
What do you mean when you was younger, dude? You still monkey with it today.
Yeah, but not as much.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, when I was a kid, I could tell you the model and make of almost any aircraft, whether a helicopter or plane.
You were slightly eat up with it. That is true.
I had heard the Kenneth Arnold story hundreds of times over the 13 years we've been doing this podcast. I've read about it in books and all that stuff. But I never once thought to look at what he described and he drew I never thought to look. I just thought he saw a flying saucer. So when I looked up, what would he described? And I'm going to show you this picture. I know the people at home can't see it, but this is what he drew. This is what he said he saw.
Yeah, it looks like one of our bombers.
I was going to say, are you familiar? When I saw that image, I go, I know exactly what that looks like. And remember, this was in 1946.
Mm-hmm.
The World War had ended, right?
Recently.
And we all know through projects like Project Paperclip mm-hmm. and other things that we took Nazi scientists, whoever could help us with our rocket program. Don't you think that we probably confiscated any other planes and weapons and stuff? Of course we did. I mean, if you look at the inner workings of an M60, it's a direct ripoff of a MG, you know? Mm-hmm. When I saw that drawing, I go, that looks like a Horton. Are you familiar with the German designers, the Horton brothers?
Is that the one that where it had like the cockpit was like dead in the center and almost like a little dome?
No, but that was one of their aircraft.
Okay, that's the one that I remember.
So if you're listening at home and you want to see what I'm talking about, first pull up the Kenneth Arnold photo, the picture of what he described. Then I want you to pull up Horton, H-O-R-T-O-N. And the model of the aircraft I'm referring to is called the H-O-229. So the Horton H-O-229. Tell me if this doesn't look exactly like what he drew.
Yeah, that's it.
So is it possible while he was flying that those were 9 stolen German aircraft that we were test flying or we were flying back to some base?
100% it's possible.
And of course, he's like, that's a UFO. That's a flying saucer. It wasn't. I mean, this is just my personal. Maybe he saw a UFO. Yeah. But I bet it was that.
Or maybe it was something that we had created and it was knockoffs.
Right,
that stuff,
right.
Like so, you're saying, we built some or we took them and redid them in some way. And that's really all he saw. It wasn't anything extraterrestrial at the time.
Didn't describe it as flying saucers. That was misrepresented in the newspapers.
He just happened to see it during the time he was looking for something else and just randomly. They probably never expected for people to just go, oh, I've got time in a plane. I'll go help them look.
Well, and especially back then, I mean, people are on to the government lying to them now. But back then, everybody believed everything. If it was printed in the paper, by God, that was real.
Man, that's wild. That is wild.
I mean, the Germans were so far advanced of us. Of course, when the war ended,
they had some cool stuff.
We would imagine going to a warehouse and you see that thing. You're like, oh, this is coming back with us.
Yeah, like I need
that. We're going to reverse engineer this thing.
Yeah, like I need that.
Maybe they did that with the De Glock.
Maybe they did.
The Nobel.
Yes.
I don't know.
Dude, that's pretty cool.
I've never thought to look at what he drew. I just always read the story.
That makes you want to go back and start looking at other old cases and trying to find out if they've drawn exactly what they saw, what it was. But yeah, that's 100%. That looks just like a Horton. What he drew, and like I said, it may not be the exact as what the Germans had. Maybe it was, we've altered it. We also know that there was a lot of experimental aircraft in the 50s.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, they had test pilots flying some of the craziest looking things trying to just get speeds up. It's what they were looking for. So, yeah, I mean, that could have easily been some altered, some sort of rat rotted version or maybe that exact same thing. And when you talk about it, look, I always think back to it. I'd have to defer to you. They were some of the planes, and I don't remember if it was Navy or the Air Force that had them, but they were almost like you would see them on the runways when they were doing the test pilots. They were just polished like aluminum.
Yeah, yeah.
Like those things were shiny to no end.
And he claimed that the light coming off them was front. He knew it was reflective of the sunlight.
Because he understands planes.
He wasn't saying it was light.
I know what that is.
He wasn't saying these things were flying saucers, and he said it was going from north to south. So in my mind, we captured 9 Horton HO-229s, and we had some pilots, and we were flying them south to some base to study them. They'd fly in a convoy. They didn't think anybody'd be up there.
Back then especially, right? There's nobody monitoring that in the 40s while you're just wheeling down. I've told the stories of all the old cowboys I knew that had them.
Yeah,
when they were kids, bought them after the war and flew them up and down the Brazos River, flying them under the bridge on Dennis and all kinds of stuff on old canvas planes from back in the day when you could literally. This is like the stories that you hear from your granddad or your dad talking about buying guns through Sears and Roebuck.
Yeah.
You could literally just go pick up a plane for little or nothing. You didn't have to know how to fly it. They were just like,
hey,
good
luck.
Are you kidding? Most of the guys probably didn't finish school, went off to the war, got done with the war, got them a plane and went to monkeying around with it.
Yeah.
Dude, you might be onto something. That's pretty cool.
It's a theory I've had. I never thought to look at what he
didn't even know you had it till you went to dig. And then when it hit you, you were like,
whoa, that looks like a Horton.
Wait a minute. That's cool.
That's all I got for the UFO subject for today.
Well, folks, let's take a quick one, pay some bills. When we get back, I got a couple stories I'm going to share with you, and then we're going to get out of here. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yes. With Kyle's theory, I think you might be onto something, for real.
I mean, it's just a theory. He might have actually saw UFOs. I don't know. But it's weird that he, when they misquoted him, it started the phrase flying saucer, and then that took off.
Yeah.
All the movies there, on Roswell happened just a couple months later in July. It just took off, right? And then all the movies, The Day the Earth Stood Still, all those things, like you were talking about in the 50s.
50s sci-fi was some of the greatest artwork. It's like, oh, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
All the comics, everything was about flying saucers for like a good decade and a half.
Dude, that's cool.
I wish I was my age now in the 50s.
Oh, to see all of that, to see what it
was
like.
The cars, everything was cooler.
Yeah.
I'd be too old to go to Vietnam.
That's true. Yeah, that would be fun to see. Like you said, the cars, just the way things were built.
The simplicity of life.
Yeah. I would go back in time and take one of those old ovens and bring it back to now. Because I love those old ovens. All right, folks, I've got something here for you. Samuel writes in and says, I was camping with a friend in the snowy range in a group of lakes called the Gap Lakes in Wyoming. Boy, I bet that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We were testing our ability to go lighter, so we only brought sleeping pads and a tarp for shelter. The first night was rainy and miserable. I'd not picked the best spot because I was on a slight incline and kept sliding downhill off my sleeping pad. The second night was better. We moved camp a little further uphill into a small clearing where we both had flat places to sleep. This spot was about 100 to 150 yards from the lake, where we'd been fishing all day. We had pulled out a few trout for dinner. We had a couple of trout left over that we'd planned to cook up for breakfast. So we left them on a stringer in the lake. The water was extremely cold because we were above 11,000 feet, and there was still plenty of snow feeding the lake. When we decided to put out the fire and go to bed, I had an uneasy feeling that something nearby was watching us and studying us.
Uh-oh.
My friend even said he felt it, too. We were both armed with 45s and kept them close in case anything crept up on us during the night. That's God's round right there. I did not sleep well. For quite a while, I felt something was near us. I heard a few rustles in the leaves and some twigs breaking. Russell, is that you? But there were no growls or other animal sounds. When the sun finally came over the 12,000-foot peak in the morning, I was relieved the night was over. After putting on our boots and jackets, we headed down to start the campfire and cook the trout. When I pulled the trout out of the lake, I found that the rope stringer had been pulled out of the water. The trout were gone. The area around the lake was rocky, so it was hard to check for tracks. The rock the stringer had been tied to had not moved, so whatever took the fish had eaten them right off the rope or worked them free without pulling the anchor. That at least verified what I already felt during the night. Something had been around us. It was not the creepiest thing that's ever happened, but I was aware and ready, Samuel. Well, there's two things that I instantly think of. Turtles.
Yep.
And I don't know if turtles are up there in that cold water. Probably not, because it's awful cold. Or raccoons.
Yeah, for 100%.
I've done the exact same thing, left fish on a stringer, and if overnight we've lost them either to turtles or you'll lose them to raccoons, something foraging coming along that way, could have easily grabbed them and just ran off with the whole mess.
Maybe aliens took them. Remember, we were just talking a couple episodes ago, the guys had the rabbit traps.
Yep.
And the aliens had placed them out there. They were then trying to catch some rabbits for dinner.
This is true.
Now they're scanning and they're like, these guys are asleep. There's a whole stringer of fish down there.
Like, look at all of them. Look at all of them. Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe so.
Maybe so. Well, I'm going to give you one more here.
Okay.
This one comes from North Central Alabama.
Man, we got a lot of Alabama stories.
Man, it's popping today. My two friends, who are a married couple, and I were walking on my family land in North Central Alabama. The property is about 170 acres and is heavily wooded with both pines and hardwoods. It also has many trails running through it. It was already dark, but my friends wanted me to take them for a walk on the trails. So a couple of the neighbor's dogs followed us, a coonhound and a Great Pyrenees. We walked south, then east towards my camping area. We were hanging out at my camping spot when something changed behind us, further back down the trail where we had just come from, and the dogs started acting strangely. We looked back and saw them come out of the woods to our left and stand on the trail. The Great Pyrenees started growling very low and seemed defensive. The coonhound is usually a goofball, but even he seemed disturbed by something. Both dogs were staring back down the trail toward the west. At that point, I immediately got a strange and serious feeling. It was ominous. I have learned to trust my gut. And I recommend that to anybody who spends time in the woods or around a person or animal that feels instinctively threatening. So I told my friends we'd better get back to the house. To get my point across, I added grimly, now. We started heading west on the trail. And if I remember correctly, the dogs had already moved away from the area by then. As we were walking, I looked back and saw my friend's wife looking into the woods off the trail. She staggered back a few steps. Her husband had walked ahead, so I asked her what was wrong. This was the same area where the dogs had been growling earlier. She said, I'll tell you when we get back. I don't want to scare him. Her husband is easily spooked, so she kept quiet until we returned to the house. When we got back, I asked her what she had seen. She told us that she felt she needed to look off trail and into the trees. When she did, she saw something halfway behind a tree looking at her. Now, we all had on headlamps. She said it was human-like, pale or whitish, with an oval-shaped head, that it looked like it was crouching and had very long limbs. She kept stressing how skinny it was, especially the limbs. She said it had a surprised look on its face, almost like it didn't expect us to be there.
Mm.
My friends, relatives, and I use those trails regularly, but not usually at night. According to her, the thing was bobbing back and forth in a creepy way. It would move its head behind the tree, then sway its head and shoulders back rhythmically to look at her again. She said it didn't appear aggressive at the moment, but it looked scary. Later, I pulled up the famous trail cam image often associated with the rake, or whatever that thing is supposed to be. When she saw it, she got a shocked look on her face and nodded yes. However, she made it clear that what she saw was not exactly the same. The very next night, I was on the back porch when I heard a freaky, very shrill scream come from the woods. I don't know whether the scream and the sighting were related, but I have lived in the country for most of my life and I've never heard anything like it. There have been multiple strange things that have happened around here, but this is the only incident I know of involving this particular creature.
Mm.
So, I like that it's bob. Maybe it's flirting. It's bobbing out. It's dancing, right? It's kicking it down through there. The electric, cha-cha-cha, just getting it around there behind that tree.
And maybe it's got earbuds in.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe it was just trying to get its run on. The dog scared it, and it's like, look, I don't like dogs. They don't like me.
Yeah.
Then y'all are milling around down there. I like how she didn't report feeling that dread. She didn't report feeling the aggressiveness. She didn't report any of it. She just like it was just there hanging out watching her. That's an odd report because usually everyone that sees them gets that feeling of fear or dread.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Not this one. She's like, it's just hanging out. Maybe the dogs being there helped more than anything, too.
That's true.
They didn't dig it, but look, it's a Great Pyrenees. Like, I ain't digging that either.
Six-toed.
Yeah, like, I don't need to lose my skinny limb to watch that dog run off with it in his mouth.
Yeah, we got lots of Great Pyrenees around here. People keep them on the ranches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. Some more crazy, creepy stories. Philly, thanks so much for all the creepy UFO stuff.
Yeah, man. Thank you for sharing your rake stories and stuff like that.
I don't really like the fact that it follows the cars. I'm not down with it.
Yeah, I know. I think about it when I'm driving late at night on an old county road. I'm like, please don't bother me.
Yeah, please don't do this.
I got enough problems, right?
Right. I don't need abductions and aliens tagging me to follow me and my family for the rest of my days and my bloodline. I don't need that. I got enough going on.
Right.
Right, I got enough happening. I don't need that.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Folks, I hope everybody has a good 4th of July. Please come back with all your digits.
Happy birthday, America.
Yeah, big 250. 250.
We look pretty good for 250.
Yeah, now that I've been thinking about it since you mentioned the beginning of the show about barbecuing.
Oh, now you're getting some ideas, aren't you?
I'm hungry.
Yeah. I barbecued just the other day. Made a pork loin, slow cooked a pork loin, made a bunch of pickles. I've done some pickling. I've pickled peppers, pickled onions, pickled pickles. Dude, I've been throwing it down. Made some salsa.
Maybe I'll make some pulled pork on Saturday, some pulled pork sandwiches.
What I like about it is it's easy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, just put it in the crock pot.
Pork is so easy. Just mix it all, do what you want. Even on the smoker, I throw it on a pellet grill. I mean, it's so easy to get it to where you just do it the way you want to. Although, after watching a few of those videos and messing around with that sous vide machine stuff you got, I think I'm going to get a loin one time. Really season it up, right? Get it all done. Sous vide it and then slice it up for like deli meat.
Let me know when you want to borrow it. I'll bring it over.
The thing's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to tell them that you're busy with yours and I'm just going to order one.
There you go. Even better. You got any cool stories you want to share with Cam and I and the listeners? You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. And remember, if you want more stories, you can always join us on Patreon. Just go to Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can search it. You can find it. You can give away the gift, patreon.com/expandedperspectiveselite/gift. And don't forget about the Glimmer Man book. Get yourself the Glimmer Man book. You can go to Amazon. Get it for yourself. If you want an autographed copy, email the show, Attention Big Fizzy. Send us your address. Send us payment. And we will ship you an autographed book. I know I've been getting lots of messages from the people that are finally receiving their books.
Kyle's been doing something unique in this book signing world, folks. If you really want a good one, he puts on red lipstick, kisses it right underneath his name. You'll get a big pucker kiss from Big Fizzy.
That's right. All right, folks. Well,
that's probably not true. He's not going to do that. But would be funny if he did.
I'll do it to one lucky person.
I wouldn't consider that lucky. Maybe they need to pay extra $5. You don't get that.
All right, everybody. Have a good one. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back.
there's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.